Today is the 2nd of December, 2008. Astrologically, yes, last night, night before, we had on our planetary planner a gold, double gold day, days. Double gold, when the moon is with Venus, that's a gold day. If the moon is with Jupiter, that's a gold day. But the moon is with Venus and Jupiter. Double gold. So that is very, very favorable time. Highly fortunate. Highly auspicious. How often does this happen? You know, maybe once a year. If we're lucky. So we have that for almost 3 days. And many people remarked on how beautiful it was when they looked in the sky last night and saw. I went to look myself on more than one occasion, and clouds in front of my eyes. So I actually didn't see it, but I imagined it. So I guess Venus was right on the edge of the moon, or tip behind it or in front of it.
So when I felt the top corner of the moon, or bottom corner.
Yeah, so the two of them were together.
Right beside him.
So it was a wonderful day. Gold days are excellent days to begin important work, important endeavors. And Kalindi and I managed to work three of them into the schedule.
Pardon?
I said they're important days for important endeavors, so we did about three different things. Which leads me to say that Jupiter has been in Sagittarius in his own sign. Jupiter's been in Sagittarius for this past year in his own sign, which is it's actually very favorable, very auspicious. Notwithstanding some of the events that have taken place this year, it is considered favorable. Because people will become more spiritual and turn more to spirituality. Directly, indirectly, in a roundabout way. People will look for greater truth and meaning in their lives and principle to follow. They'll look for dharma, purpose. And all that comes to a close on December 9th when Jupiter moves forward into the sign of Capricorn. For most of next year, 2009.
So now the next 7 days would be an extremely powerful time to be deciding what your purpose is.
Yeah, it would be. Well, it's not to say that you can't do it afterward.
Yeah, of course.
But it would be, yeah. It'd be good. It'd be better to take advantage of the time between now and December 9th and make some decisions or initiate some things, put some things into motion. Most assuredly, just about anything. Well, spirituality, but it could be anything. So, you'll see what I mean when I get to the next part. Jupiter in Capricorn is Jupiter debilitated. It's as weak as it can be in Capricorn. A planet is debilitated in one sign out of 12. So you get a 1 in 12 shot of a planet being in a position of debilitation. It is as it sounds, debilitated, handicapped. And Jupiter generally spends a year in a sign. So that means Jupiter goes to the zodiac in 12 years, 12 signs. So sometimes, you know, they go retrograde motion, backward motion, and this may throw thing off a little bit, but generally that's how it works. So Jupiter moves into Capricorn on December 9th and then exits Capricorn officially. I'll clarify that in a minute. Officially on December 19th, 2009. So December 9th this year, to December 19th, next year. 09. So Jupiter's debilitated for a year. And Rahu, the great shadow, is in Capricorn right now. He's like a mugger lying in wait behind a trash can, waiting for an unsuspecting victim. That's kind of how this is. So Jupiter is going to be with Rahu for the coming year. So what can we expect? Now, I've written about this already, which you can read under Planetary Events on the website. And I called it 2009, The Gathering Clouds. So that's there. And we're coming into a time of great challenge. Jupiter is the planet of faith and belief. So what's going to happen is that our faith and our belief will be tested. What faith? What belief? Well, whatever you place your faith in, whatever you place your belief in, that's what will be tested. I believe the economic outlook is going to get a lot worse, and that shouldn't be a news flash, because I wouldn't be the only guy saying that. And we're just kind of heading in that direction. We're not about to come out of that anytime soon, I don't think. I think we're going to have at least another year of it anyway. And perhaps it'll be a sobering experience. We are driven in our culture to believe that consuming is everything. The more you consume, the better it is for you. Whatever you buy, hanging out at since one is hanging out at a group of stores, the place to hang out at. But that's become very fashionable in, you know, several decades. Hanging out at a mall. Unless you want to buy something, why? Eating too much, supersize me. You know, if I could have something this big to drink, why would I want something this big? And, you know, when you ask for a cup this size, they don't have it. In America, they don't have it. It's only this size or this size. Which one do you want? So, it's overconsumption. Where it's rampant materialism on some level or another. So, people will become disillusioned. That's what's going to happen. It will lead to disillusionment. And that can be a very dark place, a place of despair and breaking of the faith. Well, I thought the government was going to look after us. Interesting idea. Well, I thought the economy was strong. Here in Ireland, we've had the Celtic Tiger. Well, I thought the Celtic Tiger would continue. Nothing continues. Everything's ebb and flow, always. So, best case scenario is it will be sobering enough for us to begin to look at what the true value, meaning, purpose, principle of life is. And if you place your faith in things that are temporary, material, illusory, and not of real value, then it might be a good thing for that faith to be shattered and for a deeper faith or a greater step toward truth to emerge from all that. So Jupiter is the planet of money, wealth, finances. So debilitated Jupiter in the sky means somebody's going to suffer financially. Does that mean everybody? No. Never works like that. But some people will. I mean, how many companies already? It hasn't even happened. It hasn't even started. How many companies have lost their value? You read today in the newspaper, Donald Trump and his casinos, one of his divisions is casinos and hotels. It lost 99% of its value in the last 2 years. So it's worth pennies on the dollar.
If he pledges it over and over again.
Pardon?
He's bankrupt in a few years.
Well, yeah. I mean, God bless him. He'll remake himself. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of rude awakenings going on. Mass layoffs. And as we were discussing a few moments ago, yeah, and then it's left to the people to bail out these big companies. This is the greatest mystery of them all. Yes, well, mismanaged companies and greedy people running such companies and banks, etc. And why not get the people to bail us out? Yes, why not? So this is the biggest illusion of them all. When one is affected by Rahu in a birth chart, as Jupiter will be affected by Rahu all through the next year. Rahu's job, he's in charge of illusion. That's his job. He's Mr. Maya. So that means he's going to cover you with even greater illusion and make you think that left is right and black is white. That's his job. And life down here in the material world is what could be more wonderful. That's Rahu's job, like Maya. But really, ultimately, he does us a favor by bringing us to the point of satiation, where we begin to realize that, okay, this isn't making me happy. This isn't fulfilling my desires. This isn't necessarily where it's at. And then you come out, you begin to come out of the illusion, begin to emerge from it. And the veils get lifted one at a time. Well, sometimes more than one at a time. Usually you can only handle one at a time. Two or three up at once. It's a little too much daylight all at once, you know. So, I mean, that's what we can hope for at best, is that we'll see through some of the stuff that's going on and come to a greater place within ourselves of expressing our own truth. We can go on and complain about everybody else, but if we don't express our own truth in our own lives, then, you know. So it'll be a challenging time. And but at the same time, it could be quite exhilarating. Now, Jupiter will move forward, actually, in the middle of the year, May, June, July, into Kumbh, into Aquarius. And that could improve things, perhaps, for a few months, or show some light at the end of the tunnel. According to Vedic astrology, Vedic understanding, when Jupiter goes into Aquarius, this is a highly, highly auspicious time. Because that's when they have the Kumbh Mela. The Maha Kumbh Mela happens every 12 years at the confluence of three rivers in India, where about 1 million people gather. It's the biggest spiritual gathering in the world, and in the West, most people never heard of it, which is kind of funny. But that's when Jupiter goes into Kumbh. Kumbh means water pot. And it means Aquarius. You know, Aquarius, he's pouring the water. So, 3 months, May, June, July, 2009, and officially from December of 2009, throughout 2010, Jupiter will be in Kumbh, in the sign of Aquarius, in the sky. So that is considered to be a very, very auspicious time, spiritually speaking. So what does that mean if we project 2 years down the line? It means that we're going to go through a time of great disillusionment, loss of faith and belief in institutions, governments, banks, materialism, value system, morals, ethics, I don't know. And we're going to emerge from that, and be in a position where we can renew and regenerate ourselves in 2010. This is a wonderful time, Jupiter in Aquarius, for communion with God, reconnection, philosophical reconnection, redefinition of your life and what your values are and where you're going. Then 2011, Jupiter goes into Mina, Pisces. Jupiter rules Pisces. So he'll be in his own sign. Again, Pisces is the natural 12th sign or 12th house, right? Aries too. Pisces. And Pisces is all about charity, benevolence, philanthropy, altruism, humanity, humanitarianism. It's about what you give to others. It's about what you do for others and for the benefit of the world. And usually people come to that either when they genuinely arrive at it, knowing that it's the right thing to do, or they got way too much money and they got to do something with it because the government will take it. Which unfortunately is true of many people who give in charity. It isn't really that they want to give in charity, it's just they got to do something with all the money. Pisces would motivate us to be more kind, more giving. And more importantly, Pisces is the sign of moksha. Moksha. Moksha means liberation, emancipation. So emancipation ultimately of the soul from the cycle of samsara, repeated birth and death. That's a longer term goal. It also means emancipation of the mind from identification with matter, materialism, and the body. But this body is pretty cool, huh? Really like it. Two arms, two legs, you know, one head. Yeah. It's not that cool, the body. Not that cool at all. Because it only lasts for a while. So, to liberate ourselves from misidentification, to think that we're bodies, we're not. We're souls. So if we look, 2009, 10, 11, looks pretty good. Depending how far you look into the future, you know. Some people need to be let down. You know, it's like this. The child is playing, and you go into the room, please come to dinner. Child isn't here, he just keeps playing. You go in again a few minutes later, please come to dinner. Looks, goes back to playing. You go in again a few minutes later and just like, would you please put your toys down, come to dinner? Nothing. Doesn't move. Now you go in, you take, grab the toy, you smack it down, you pick them up, you whack them on the head, and you drag them out to dinner. That's 2009. It's because you didn't listen. Over and over and over again, you didn't listen. Now you got whacked. That's what it's like. Now will you pay attention? Maybe. Maybe not. That's 2009. That's what's required. And hope she doesn't have the wooden spoon when she comes in the room, because then you're in real trouble. Kalindi hid all the wooden spoons behind the radiator in the childhood. They wonder why the house went up in flames one day. Nah, just kidding. Just kidding. But she did do that. She hid all the wooden spoons. Her mother kept having to buy wooden spoons. She kept never been able to find them. Then she opened a kitchen supply store after that. What's your name?
Comments from a question.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that 2012 is a time of a huge raising of consciousness on the planet, which seems to tie into what you're saying. Although I don't know, it's in relation to the planet, it's just something that I've heard for many years in the yoga world, and you know, so I'm sure it's coming from someone like you. It seems that there are a lot of people who need to move from here to here,
yep,
in that time, whereas there are very few. Like, I consider myself still very, you know, opening and opening and opening more, and I would say more open to this than many people I know, and I still have very far to go. So how is there going to be such a huge raising of consciousness in the next couple of years, that so many people are vibrating on such a low level? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I believe I do.
Mm-hmm.
Different people have a different predictions and beliefs about 2012. I don't think anybody has a corner on the market in terms of what's actually going to take place. Sometimes I get a bit of a feeling of the Y2K thing, where all the planes are going to fall from the sky and all this dreadful stuff is going to happen. Of course, nothing happened. The reason 2012 is a significant date is because there are several wheels in the Mayan calendar, and they all come clicking to the same spot in December of 2012. So all the wheels are clicking to the zero point, so to speak. And they're thinking that this will usher in a shift in consciousness. It might. It might do that. You know, people always look for something real dramatic, but it usually doesn't happen in a real dramatic way. It usually happens fairly subtly. You know, the most dramatic thing I've seen in my entire life in terms of mass shift in consciousness was the 60s, when literally most of the Western world, which I happened to be born into, there was a whole shift in consciousness, the like of which I've never seen since. So that's what they're hoping. They're hoping another kind of phenomenon like that will happen. I don't know, really. So it might be more subtle than believed. To answer it differently, well, maybe, yeah, that's what all this is about. This big collapse. You know, this whole economic thing and the reality we find ourselves into is, it's like a house of cards. It's all, I mean, if you've seen some of these internet presentations, videos, YouTubes on, you know, how the financial system works, and all it's based on is, there's no gold standards, just debt. Debt based on debt based on debt based on this guy owes money and he'll be paying every month. Okay, so based on that, I'm going to lend this guy money and then he's going to lend that guy money. And all it is this massive hill of debt. and it just fell apart. That's what's happening.
So do Jupiter have an Earth in Makra, in the 10th?
Right now?
Yeah.
No, Jupiter's in...
Is it going to come like Aquarius?
When?
You said that in the middle of next year.
Yeah, in the middle of next year.
Yeah. So this must be in the 10th. Like, it'll come by the 11th, Rashi, like Zodiac sign. And then,
yeah.
It's only there for 3 months, so
the Kumbh
Mela
is
not next year.
No, year after it would be. 10th Rashi, 11th Rashi, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. But only for 3 months it'll go. It'll go backwards into Capricorn.
Is it depleted? Like on the 10th? Is it depleted in the 10th, actually?
Yeah, in Capricorn.
Capricorn, yeah. Okay.
So, I believe it's all leading up to that in one way, shape, or form. To what extent there will be a mass shift in consciousness? I mean, number one, you can't take anybody where they don't want to go. And number two, you can't take anybody where they're not prepared to go. Can you? I don't think so. You know, so it's not like it's just all going to go like a tsunami and everybody's going. I don't think so. You know, there has to be some preparation. And again, I tend to believe it'll be far more subtle than most people would like it to be. You know, I mean, there's things like this pop into my head. How many the end is near guys have we seen? You know, repent. The end is near. The end is coming. You know, this is a big thing, especially in America, because America was founded by religious zealots, religious fanatics. Do you know that? Pilgrims who no one wanted around in other countries like England and Holland and Germany. You guys are just too over the top. Would you get on a boat and get out of here? That's who founded America. Religious fanatics. Pilgrims. So, pilgrim. What does pilgrim mean? They're on a pilgrimage, doesn't it? To the new world, where everything will be perfect. And this strain of religious fanaticism is alive and well in America, in case you hadn't noticed. I lived most of my life in America. It's a fact. And this recording is going out over my website to America, so just so you know, I don't have any problems talking about that. They know it. So, religious fanaticism and, extremism is what I was talking about. And, preaching the end is near. And how many predictions did we have of the world coming to an end over the years? All kinds of them. And that hasn't happened, nor do I think that's going to be happening anytime soon, since there's, according to Vedic understanding, Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, has only another 427,000 years before it ends. And that's like winter. And then it shifts to the Golden Age, Satya Yuga. And that's like spring. So, not going anywhere for a while. We're going to be here. So, I'm not sure exactly what will happen, but there's a little bit of prognostication for you. Anybody like to comment on what you've seen in your own crystal ball?
Point of view,
correct.
one of them is very hard.
Yeah, we're always faced with the practicality of earning a living in the material world. We all are, unless you're independently wealthy. And you know, it becomes a real pain in the neck to do that, because a lot of times you want to do things that maybe don't bring money in initially, and then you get practical and down to earth, and you do what you have to do to bring the money in, and then you get sidetracked with it. And at the risk of sacrificing what's most important to you. But it's not an easy decision to make. And I happen to have some insight into your life, so I think your path's being clear. That's what I think. Yeah. Well, you know, there's two ways to approach or arrive at anything. The easy way and the hard way. And of course, we would prefer the easy way, but that doesn't always happen. And if we have to get there, inevitably, if there's an inevitability involved, well then, we'll get there the way we have to get there. I was always sort of dumbfounded that I don't want to wax too long on the 60s, but in the 60s, there was an actual tangible feeling of love like I've never experienced between people, between strangers. I mean, real, genuine, loving behavior and vibes and energy among people of all different countries. And you could meet somebody, and that would be there, like, immediately. It was an amazing thing. And to have lost it almost completely and gone to a much more rampant degree of materialism, where that really doesn't exist. Not that there aren't nice people out there. There's lots of nice people. But, you know, it's like, didn't this happen, you know, a few short years ago, 30 years ago? And now there's very little evidence of it remaining. People are so driven toward materialism. You know, I found that strange. But, so maybe this next step is the hard way. You don't learn the easy way, you learn the hard way. Or you won't learn. So, I don't know. It doesn't matter what happens in life, you know, because it goes on. It always goes on. And you always have to get up every day, and there's a roof. There's a bed. There's something to eat. You know, lovely dinner this evening. Courtesy of Nina and our team. Very blessed. Simple, but very nice. So that, you know, life goes on. It just somehow does. Well, I was going to read some of this, but it just doesn't fit with the whole atmosphere today, I don't think. I was going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. That particular verse, I don't think it's going to do it. There's a famous sage in India. He's a Brahmarshi. He's actually a liberated soul. And you read about him in the Vedas, all through the Vedas. And his name is Narad Muni. Muni means sage. He's actually the son of Brahma, creator. So he's liberated. He can hang out in the material world, or he can hang out in the spiritual world, go back and forth as he likes. And very often you find him in the midst of stories and the unfolding of particular circumstances. And he's like the guy who's the catalyst to push the thing forward a little bit, you know. Anyway, and he carries a veena, which is a bit like a sitar, but not veena. Like Saraswati plays a veena there. So Narada Muni was walking down the road one day and on earth in India. And he passed by this devout Brahmin. Brahmin is a priest, holy man, born to a good family, and you know, more or less, his duty is to praise God and help other people do spiritual ceremonies and different things like this. So the Brahmin was busy doing his rituals. Brahmins do various rituals and prayers and mantras. And he said, "Oh, my dear Narad, good to see you. Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going to see Vishnu. I'm going to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha, to see Vishnu." "Oh, to see God. When you go, will you ask him, am I going to be liberated? When am I going back to the spiritual world? How many more lifetimes do I have?" And he says, "Yes. I'll ask him for you. Tell you next time I see you." So Narada went on a little further. Alongside the road was a shoemaker, a cobbler, sitting under a big banyan tree. Sacred banyan fig tree. And he says, "Oh, Narad, good to see you. Please accept my respects. Where are you going?" "Oh, I'm going to see Vishnu. I'm going to the spiritual realm to see Vishnu." "Oh, wonderful." He said, "Do you mind doing me one favor?" He says, sure, I am. "What do you need?" "When you see Vishnu, will you ask him when I am to come and stay with him in the spiritual world? How many more lifetimes do I have? Because I sure would like to go there." And Narada says, yes, no problem. I'll ask." So Narada goes to Vaikuntha. You know what Vaikuntha means? Free of anxiety. That's what Vaikuntha means. Free from stress. So if that's actually the name of the spiritual world, or one of the names, then does it stand to reason that if you're free from stress, you would be in the spiritual world? Something to think about. So he goes to Vaikuntha. And Vishnu is there. And Narada says, "My dear Vishnu, so nice to see you. Vishnu says, "Where have you been?" "I was down on the earth, traveling here and there." And he says, "And what did you find?" He says, "Well, I found a couple of devotees of yours." Vishnu says, "Oh yes, very nice. I always like my devotees." And he says, "Yeah, there was a Brahmin, and he asked such and such a place, you know this Brahmin?" "Oh yes, I know." He's asking, "When does he get to come back to the spiritual world? How many more lifetimes?" Vishnu says, "Oh, it'll be a while yet for him. Not this lifetime. There's quite a few lifetimes left for him. I'm not even sure how many. It's going to take some time." Narada says, because, you know, he's seeing the guy, he's doing his prayers, he's doing his puja, his rituals, and his mantras. Think the guy'd be ready to go, right? "No, a few more lifetimes." He said, and then I saw one cobbler, he's sitting under a banyan tree. Oh yes, the cobbler. He's wondering the same thing. When does he go back to the spiritual world? How much longer? He wants to know. You tell him this life, it will be his last life. He'll be back with me at the end of this life. And Narcissus. But he's a simple cobbler. You know. He's not a learned man. He's not high-born like the Brahmin. He's not especially blessed like the Brahmin. He's working with leather, you know, skins, hides, making shoes. Not so nice. So how is it he's going back? He says, well, Krishna says, go back down. And you approach both of them and you tell them that you've seen me. And this is what you tell him. And he told him something. He said, and then you'll see what I mean. So Nara goes back down. Comes walking down the road again. Passes by the Brahmin. Sitting there doing his pujas and doing his mudras and his mantras. And he says, ah, Narada. Good to see you. Did you see Vishnu? Yes, yes, I have seen Vishnu. And what was he doing? He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. What? He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Ugh. Nonsense. What are you talking this nonsense for? You expect me to believe that? You didn't even see Vishnu. Okay. Have a nice day. Narada goes off. And he comes upon the cobbler. And the cobbler says, oh, Narada! You're back from Vaikuntha. Yes. Did you see my lord? I saw him. Tell me, what was he doing? He was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. He's so wonderful. The things he can do. I am amazed. And Narada says, you believe that God can thread an elephant through the eye of a needle? Oh, yes, of course I do. Well, why would you believe that? Well, look. Here I sit under this tree. And at the right time of the year, the fruits fall down. You open the fruit, it's filled with seeds. And in every single seed, in every single fruit in this tree, is a whole tree waiting to be born, to come into being. An elephant through the eye of a needle? This is nothing for him. And so, Narada saw why the cobbler was on his last life. Because his faith was the mighty faith. And he believed on the deepest level. So that's what the test of faith is about.
It's a great story.
You like that one? I got that from the Guru Dave. Okay, I think I'm going to save this for next time. Let's do some meditation then. Close your eyes, breathe. Relax. And let go. Deeply. Deeply relax. And let go. allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. Deeply relax. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light comes down from the heavens, down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above, grounded in the earth below. Beautiful place, somewhere in nature, and you're walking along, and just over there on the hill is what you need to achieve. It's your purpose. It's your destiny. It's your heartfelt desire. It's the meaning of your life. It's your dharma. It's who you are. It's something like that. But it's not easy to get to. It's not easy to reach. There are three obstacles that you must first overcome as you approach the hill of destiny. You walk toward it, and now on the path you encounter the first obstacle, the first challenge. What is that challenge? What must you do? What must you accomplish, or what must you overcome in this challenge? What do you do? Do you give up and go back? Or do you go forward? How do you overcome this challenge? do it now, please. Assuming you've overcome the first obstacle, you should be enlivened and feeling more confident and more determined as you go forward on the path to the hill of purpose. Up ahead is the second challenge or difficulty that you must overcome. What is that challenge or difficulty? Will you confront this obstacle? Will you take it on? How will you confront it? What will you do? What will you do? Do it now, please. Did you survive it? Did you cross over? Did you succeed in the second challenge? If so, you're stronger than ever now. You're stronger than you've ever been before. You didn't actually believe you could cross both of those, or did you? With renewed faith, renewed strength, and renewed courage, continue down the road toward the hill of dreams, fulfilled dreams. And you come upon the third challenge of three. What is the obstacle this time? cross over. Do what you have to do now to overcome this obstacle. Crossed the third obstacle. Have you? Still alive? Still vital? Having come out the other end? Now you're invincible. Nothing can stop you. And there's the hill of your most treasured desire in front of you. Ascending this hill, no difficulty at all now. What awaits you at the top of this hill? What did you learn in this process about yourself that you didn't know before? What illusion or mistaken notion did you now see for its truth or its reality to enable you to achieve your goal? What is waiting there for you? How do you feel about it, your achievement? If you're not finished, please continue until you're finished. If you're finished, please return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed. And at peace. I got to do that one. Good one, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, well, that's what meditation is. It means keep your mind there. Because it always wants to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
As my guru used to say, you must beat it with shoes. Okay. I want to tell you mine, not because I want to tell you mine, but because there's one aspect of it that I found to be quite interesting. Normally I don't do meditations while I'm conducting them, but I did today. My first obstacle was a river full of crocodiles. And I had to cross the river. And the crocodiles, I think, represent... you know, people or pretty much anything that would oppose me or try to devour me, even including people that might be envious or such people. So what I did was I slipped into the river, and there were a lot of them. I mean, like, a lot of them. So, you know, I couldn't just, like, hop through, nothing like that. So I slipped into the river at a place where where they wouldn't notice me. And I swam down to the bottom of the river. And I swam along the bottom. I went under them all. They were all above me, you know. The crocodiles are on top of the water. Like. And I went underneath and slid out the other end. And they, not only did they not get me, they didn't see me. Then the next obstacle was people on a road. Rushing both directions, this way and that way, but so many of them, there wasn't even a break in the crowd, and they were going like mad, you know, rush. And I mean, if you went through them, you get mowed down, no question. So I think this represented the rat race, because I more or less checked out of the rat race around about 1990, and managed to check out pretty successfully. So what I did there was I just rose up and floated above it all and down the other side. So I didn't have to participate in it. Not participating in the rat race is a big theme with me. Personally.
And that seems to be pretty much what you did. You rose above it all.
I rose above it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I defined what it was I was going to be and what it was I was going to do. And I did it. So that was the second obstacle. But this is the one that I found interesting. The third obstacle, I came upon myself drowning in quicksand, you know. And reaching out to me, save me, like this, you know, and going down fast. And in other words, there would have been a whole pit of quicksand in front of me that needed to be crossed, right? So what's my first inclination? To save yourself, right? Oh, I got to pull myself out. And then I went to grab the arm and said, wait a sec. If I rescue him, me, what's that going to mean? He'll need rescuing again in the future, and again and again and again, because he's going to keep getting himself in quicksand. He's going to keep being a victim. He's going to keep needing to be saved. I said, sorry. Down he went. And as soon as he went down, what was this? It was my weakness. It was my weakness going under. And immediately the quicksand disappeared, a nice solid road appeared, and I walked across. And then easily up the hill, and at the top, the god, he's waiting. So, anyway, I thought that was interesting, the quicksand man. Because the initial impulse is to save. I'm going to be a hero. I'll save them. Yeah, and then again, and yet again, and again. People who need to be saved regularly. Anybody disagree with that? People who are into drama regularly.